All right. Well, President Biden lied when he said that he would not approve any new oil and drilling, oil and gas drilling. But of course he did. You could argue that he did it because we are in an energy crisis, although I would argue that he never meant it in the first place, and it was naive to believe that. But many of his supporters are feeling betrayed by this.
Yeah, because he stood up there on the campaign trail when, like, young girls asked him, like, Mr. President or Mr., you know, candidate, Mr. Vice President, you're running for office to win our vote. Can you tell us that there will be no more drilling in the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, we have tape of it, actually. Here is Biden in a debate saying that there would be no further oil and gas permits if he is elected.
Number one. No more subsidies for fossil fuel industry. No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period. Ends. Number one.
Okay. So that's not true, because over the weekend, the Biden administration announced that they have approved drilling in Alaska called the Willow Project. The administration was bracing for some backlash here by announcing this, and the way that they sort of couched it in order to not get back blowback is by calling it a reduction in approval. So here's the announcement from the U.S. Department of the Interior. They're saying they substantially reduced the scope of the Willow Project. They didn't say we approved it. They're saying we approved 60% of it, meaning we reduced it by 40%. But really, they approved it. They approved 3 out of 5 new drilling projects. Yes, we approved it, but less. The drill sites will be leased to ConocoPhillips. And again, 2 of the 5 were denied. Now, environmentalists are screaming bloody murder about this because of the, you know, emissions and the promise and all of that. Here is AOC posturing on about this, saying the Willow Project has been estimated to produce 287 million tons of carbon dioxide. We're going to get to that number in a minute. The equivalent of 76 coal plants. And the cause of nearly $20 billion in climate change related damages. The only acceptable Willow Project is no Willow Project. So she's saying 3 out of 5 is unacceptable. It needs to be 0 out of 5. She does well to yell about the environment because she failed us on her promise to advocate for peace. So yes, she should stick with this one because it's easy to champion the environment as a smokescreen. So you go ahead with that. But dozens of organizations in Alaska, including environmental organizations, support this. Here is a collection of letters in support of this project. And I think it's important to consider them because these are the people who live in the region. They should get a more weighted vote, I believe. And we should avoid boiling these issues down to black and white because fossil fuel use is very gray. We've talked about this before. For instance, is it better to import this energy and this fuel or to drill it ourselves and boost local economies while so doing? Don't say it's better to not use it at all. I don't want to hear that as a viable option. I especially don't want to hear that from people who have Ring doorbells and plug in toothbrushes. So let me just scroll through the names of organizations that support this. You can find this yourself on Senator Lisa Murkowski's Senate page. She's a Democratic senator from Alaska that has championed this project. And I just sort of scrolled through some of these because she's collected all of these associations saying, we want this project and we want it now. So what are they saying? They're saying that they want prosperity. Go ahead.
She's a Republican, just be clear.
Oh, I'm sorry. But yes, I misspoke. They're saying they want prosperity in their region and that they think that this will bring them prosperity. This will bring about jobs. This will boost their economy. Again, it's short-sighted of anyone to scream about denying that without considering what they're saying. Here's one example. The mayor of North Slope, which is the town smack dab in that area where these projects will occur, he says, and the point of telling this history, which he, you know, talks about how there's so many indigenous people that live in this region. He says the North Slope oil and gas resources literally come from our backyard. The development of those resources had an overall profound positive impact on our communities for 50 years. We don't have urban sprawl or malls or factories, and we don't want them. But we do want to ensure that our people continue to derive benefit from our land's natural resources to sustain our communities and enable our participation in a modern economy. Revenue from oil and gas development has been invested and will continue to be invested in the immediate and long-term survival of our communities. It is fundamental to our economic survival. May not always be that way, but it is certainly true today. And in fact, last year, the Biden administration sort of kicked the can down the road about this project by expanding the amount of time that Congress had to respond to the project. And local officials objected to that expansion, saying, we don't need outsider influence on this. We don't need Congress to ring in on it anymore. We want this now. Here is the local indigenous group's objection to that just last summer, saying the requested extension would provide no additional benefit in terms of informal environmental review for the project and would serve no purpose other than attempting to delay the project beyond the point of economic feasibility to the detriment of the Alaskan people who call this region home, the Alaskan Native people, he says. I can show you these all day. I went through dozens of these letters of people in this region saying, yes, please bring this here. Don't let Congress grandstand on it any longer. We want this and we want it now because we believe it'll bring prosperity to our region. But I can also show you dozens of videos and tweets of liberals crying in their coffee about it because of the environment.
Well, then they always cry about it in areas that don't affect them.
Absolutely. To which I say, do you know what local wildlife would be disrupted? Do you know that?
Right.
Or are you saying that because that's a media talking point? Because Michael Schellenberger points out that when drilling projects went into the Congo, here's from his great book, Apocalypse Never, the Wildlife Conservation Society, Alistair McNeilage, said that oil drilling has occurred with surprisingly little impact in those regions. He says you can find a level of disturbance. Animals will tend to move away from the immediate area of any areas of operation, but it's not a large disturbance at the level of the park as a whole if the community takes precautions to minimize impact, which these communities in Alaska have laid out that they have done in their letters, if you bother to read them.
The companies, yeah.
The communities. Oh. They've done land use surveys. They've done, you know, they have conservation efforts to make a minimal impact on the local ecosystem. Well, it has been done.
And Schellenberger points out in his book that the footprint of these things is relatively small.
Yes, we're going to talk about that. In fact, even though the media is saying that, you know, this will impact the ecosystem. Here's CBS again echoing what AOEC says, that this is going to produce an estimated 278 million tons of greenhouse gases over the course of 30 years, which is approximately the same as 2 million cars would generate over the same period. But this is doing math in a vacuum because it doesn't account for the oil we will not ship from South America, the Middle East, Russia, perhaps. It does not account for the fact that when communities become wealthier, such as the communities in Alaska that we're talking about, their carbon footprints go down because of innovation in those regions. That's provable, that anytime you raise the sort of average wealth of a community, they say, stop using as many single-use things, they stop cooking on
cow dung.
Right, things like that that cause right. more emissions. There's all sorts of data around that. It does not account for the reduction in land that we would need for alternative energy. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it also doesn't account for the fact that when you go crazy about reducing CO2 emissions, people die. So In the opposite is true. Like, oh, we want to reduce CO2 emissions, right? So the move to get rid of CO2 emissions, that is, you get rid of fossil fuels, you turn off heating for homes, you make inaccessible cooking sources, right? You make inaccessible all these forms of energy, and people die as a result of it.
Yes.
That's where you have a catastrophe.
And then as long as we're talking about land and land mass, another data point that Michael Schellenberger brings out, he says, centralizing energy production has been essential to leaving more of planet Earth for natural landscapes than with wild animals. Excuse me. Yeah, he says today all hydroelectric dams, all fossil fuel production, and all nuclear plants require less than 0.2% of the Earth's ice-free land. In contrast, the Earth's food production takes 200 times more land than this. So if we're really worried about land mass, we need to stop eating industrially produced food.
Yeah, or stop going to your Whole Foods, because as he points out, like the Whole Foods, like stuff you're getting from Whole Foods, the amount of land needed for your vegan whatever, or, you know, takes up incredible amounts of land.
Well, for instance, if you're going to only eat grass-fed beef, that takes up, like in Argentina, for instance, when they went to industrially produced meat, they were able to save something like 97% of the farmland they were using. So if we're really going to be yelling about land, we have to take all of this into account, mostly food,
right?
Much less than oil and gas.
When you clear a field, as he also points out in the book, you're uprooting all sorts of small little wildlife creatures. Like we just think about like baboons or whatever.
Or cows. We're saving cows. But then when you're eating, especially like a vegetarian-based diet, is responsible for a lot of destruction of animals.
But they don't want to hear
farmland.
That. Don't tell the people that go to Whole Foods about
rabbits,
that.
Mice, all of that kind of stuff. Now, if you're saying, well, then we just shouldn't use this type of fuel, instead we should shift to renewables, then you also cannot talk about land use, because look at this calculation, again, from Apocalypse Never. If the United States were to try to generate all of the energy it uses with renewables, we're talking about solar and wind, then 25 to 50% of all land in the U.S. would be required. So if you think that you can live your life with solar panels, then clear out everything you see, or at least half of what you can see right now, in order to lay out those wind and solar farms. By contrast, today, our energy system requires just 0.5% of land in the United States. If that doesn't make your jaw drop, I don't know, maybe you're not paying attention or you're innumerate, because that really surprised me, that statistic. So is fossil fuel the most desirable type of energy? No, in my opinion. We've spoken a lot about nuclear. I think that's the best option we've got right now.
By far.
But we've covered why that's not happening in the United States. So could it be that you're whining on Twitter about fossil fuels because you haven't done your homework? Or are you arguing for the continued impoverishment of indigenous people by yelling about the Willow Project on Twitter? That this is a possibility. In related news, though, a recent Rasmussen poll found that 60% of Americans agree that climate change rhetoric has become a religion and actually has nothing to do with the climate. This rings true if you follow the hashtag Willow Project, with people just sort of talking in a vacuum about why that's bad. But nevertheless, we've talked to you about how these numbers are not just a black and white thing to talk about on Twitter.
I love the Gateway Pundit's graphic here. How dare you? How dare you that these 60% of Americans believe climate change is a religion?
Right, because I think we're not talking about that as a positive thing. We're talking about the way that some people are unable to be critical about religion.
Well, also think of these rich people in like Connecticut or something that are like, yeah, we definitely, you know, we really want to move towards solar and wind. Okay, so we'll put some wind farms in your backyard.
In your backyard, right.
No, you can't do that. You can't put them in my backyard, because on my way to the Whole Foods, when I stop at the kids' soccer game, I don't want to be hearing the droning sound of wind. You know, I want to be able to see the birds, the seabirds and things like that. And I don't want to hear that constant humming. Put it in poor communities.
Kill birds there.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine. They can see that. That's what they call NIMBYs, is not in my backyards.
Right.
And NIMBYs are more powerful voters than YIMBYs, which are people who are saying yes in my backyard. YIMBYs are not as powerful as a immobilized votership than NIMBYs.
Well, and the people in Alaska are saying yes in my backyard. Yes, bring jobs.
They are YIMBYs. I mean, you're right.
I mean, look at Texas.
And they
right?
stand for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at Texas drilling, and look what why do people move to Texas? Not just because of the oil industry, but because of the jobs. But are people moving to Texas and they're so worried about the oil industry that they environmentally that they're moving hundreds of miles away from any kind of like drilling? You know, what are they called? Derricks? What are they called? The big things that go in the ground?
The things that are in the opening of Dallas.
I call them dinosaurs.
They looked like, as a kid, I was like, what are those things? You know, I always wanted to build those things. They just like bounce up and down all day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The oil derricks? Yeah, I was right. Okay, oil derricks. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So Are they such an environmental concern that the people don't live within hundreds of miles of an oil derrick?
I don't know.
Let us know from Texas. Like, I think people live near them. I think people live nearby. Like, I don't think it's that much of a concern, but
I don't know if the tropes are to believe they're like eight live in George Bush's backyard.
Right. But I don't want to live by a wind farm.
No,
not in my backyard.
Okay.
I don't want to be sitting here reading a book and enjoying my coffee on a Saturday morning and then hearing whoomp, 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 whoomp. And then another bird goes. Whack.
Yes. Yep, and there's also
there's another bald eagle.
There was an article recently in a major publication. I can't remember if it was New York Times or something like that, about how people are getting hurt because they fall. Like the wind propellers have sometimes unprovokedly fallen out of the sky and people are afraid to get hurt by them. So in that case, yeah, I'm an NIMBY too.
You're just walking along. I usually walk the dog in the wind farm, but I never know if a propeller is going to kill my dog.
Here lies Natalie. I got hit by a ukulele out of the other day. With my luck, I should not test wind farms.
Yeah, do not walk near a wind farm. A propeller can just fall off. And the other thing, of course, the wind farms is they don't know how to recycle them. So these propellers that are now defunct, they lay in a field. Yeah. We've shown you videos of these wind farms. They don't have a way to recycle these giant. Yeah,
they're made of fiberglass.
Oh, yeah. So turn them into Corvettes or something. I don't know. What are you going to do with them?
Yeah. But
there's nothing you can do about these things.
I don't know. Oh, what is that book? Thursday Murder Club, where she goes to visit her daughter. It's like Thursday Murder Club is such a funny book. You guys read it. And it's this elderly woman and she goes to visit her daughter at a conference room. And she's like, their conference table is made of an old airplane wing. Isn't that fun?
She's like, man, that's so cool. Like,
things these days.
These kids these days with their modern things. Yeah, you could take it. That's what they could do.
Yeah.
Take a conference room. You could take a whole conference room, take one of these wind turbine wings and put it as a conference table.
Yeah.
Like, you know what you guys are sitting your coffee on right now? This is an old wind turbine wing.
You do realize how big those things are, right? Like, people walk inside. Of them. They're huge. Yeah. That'd
be a big conference.
You'd have to have like a 40-foot conference room.
It's like in 1989 Batman when he's like, can you pass the salt? And sitting at the other end of the table.
That's the dining table.
Vicki Vale.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for watching this segment here at Redacted. We are live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time trying to share the stories that the mainstream media will not cover. You should also come over and join our community of Redacted Rebels over at redacted.inc. That's our private locals community where we can share exclusive content that we simply cannot share here on YouTube. Come over and join the rebellion together right now by going to redacted.inc. We'll see you next time.